everyone, and welcome to episode 554 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off, fresh off the plane, with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How's it going this fine Monday?
I love me some 10-hour flight delays to kick off my week, but straight... The RNG gods aligned, the lightning stopped or whatever, and I actually arrived like just in time for our podcast. So straight off the plane, here we go. Yep.
Oh, well.
You could have always tried to do it with airplane Wi-Fi, you know?
Oh, God. And that was, of course, Krim. How's it going this morning, Krim?
Good morning. Pretty excited. I've secured my secret layers and I'm all set.
That's
right.
Wow. That's not bad then. Because it just launched like 20 minutes ago, right?
Well, I got lucky in that I have like five computers and ways set up to try to see if I get line. So one of them was 9 minutes while the rest were like an hour. So I was like, okay, I don't want to deal with that.
Hey, well, at least it worked. So anyway, today we're going to be jumping around a little bit. We're going to talk first impressions of Spider-Man. We had some early access. There were some pre-release events. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to maybe predict the next year of Magic. We know we're getting all the sets next year, this weekend, at the Pro Tour. And we also found out there's a Nickelodeon crossover coming. So we're going to talk about that a bit. There is a Pro Tour this weekend. So we're going to talk a bit of Modern. And then a couple of little bits of news. Some weird stuff on social media. Some more Flame news. And then some fish mail. So that's the overview for today. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, well, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use a sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with Spider-Man. So it was pre-release weekend for Spider-Man. Last week we had early access, so we got to check out the set a little bit in Standard ahead of time. And I'm curious, I think, Krim, you said you made it to multiple pre-releases. Richard, you even made it to one on the road. How was Spider-Man pre-release? What's your first impression now that you got to play with the set a bit?
If web-slinging is one of the funniest mechanics, because, like, if you simply just block, and you have to block to kill, their hand clunks up.
Yeah.
But if you don't, it's over. Like, it's straight up over because, like, Silk, everybody I played in my, like, first pre-release had Silk. And I'm just like, dude, Silk is unbeatable. That second ability is so powerful to pump all your team for only 5 mana and to give it, like, vigilance. But all around, it was pretty fun. It's pretty aggro. I saw a lot of Mayhem decks popping off, a lot of Web-Slinger decks. I tried to roll with so you know when you do limited, you're supposed to take all the good cards, you put and make a deck out of it. Well, I took all the good cards and I removed them from my deck. And then what I did was I opened a lot of City Pigeons, right? Mm. So, and I opened with Great Power, Bioorganic Carapace, and all of these auras. So I built Pigeon Voltron, and I found out if they remove my pigeon, I lose. So I went 1-2 because I tried to Pigeon Voltron.
Oh, that's hilarious. Richard, how about you? How did you do a pre-release?
So I will say it was cool because the LGS I went to. So I was out of town. I was in Dallas. So I've never been to this place. And it was actually recommended in the podcast comments. But they gave out Spider-Man comics with the pre-release packs. So everyone got a Spider-Man comic. That was pretty cool. I will say it felt not very Spider-Man. Right? So like... the all-star of my deck was Aunt May. I had, like, no... Like, everyone's pool was like, anyone have any win cons? Like, all I have are, like, 3-2 beaters. Like, how is anyone going to close out any game, right? But Aunt May goes wild, especially with the web-slinging guy that, like...
Yeah.
For 6 mana, you make 3 bodies that are all spiders. And then
spiders,
Aunt May, like...
man?
Yeah. Triple triggers. But I will say, like, I got no special treatments, right? So, like, no showcase cards, no what's that slot called? The Marv slot, the MAR slot.
Oh, the Marvel sheet or whatever.
The special bonus sheet because they reduced it. And I actually didn't open any Spider, like actual like Spider-Man, right? Or like Scarlet Spider. So, you know, I got like some random spiders, like Spider-Man or whatever. But like, I don't know. I felt like I wasn't really playing Spider-Man. I was like actually playing like New York City Simulator, right? Like, I got a lot of engines, got a lot of like hot dogs and stuff like that, right? But it's like a little different compared to Final Fantasy where you're like, Chocobo, Summon Shiva, right? Like Cloud, yeah. I'm like, where's Peter Parker? All I got his Aunt May, right? Aunt May carrying my whole team here.
Dude, Aunt May is actually a kill on sight. Aunt May is an actual kill on sight.
I know.
She is
sneaky,
so strong.
Sneaky win con. She's so strong, right? But yeah, that, I had a blast. Web slinging is a very cool mechanic. It's actually like kind of hilarious because like normally when you jump attack on turn two, right? You force the trick and like they waste their turn essentially, but actually they can like play the trick and web sling you that same turn. You get like totally blown out, right? Like you could actually do the combat trick, web sling for one, throw in a 3-3. You're like, boy, are you dead now, right? But then sometimes you just block, they got nothing, and their game is over, right? So it adds this like really interesting dynamic here where people are trying to get in. And you don't know if they're, like, just chump attacking to get the web sling in or they actually got something, right? But, you know, it's actually fine to play your web slinging cards for their real cost. Like, the 3-mana 3-3 that web slings for one. Like, if you play as a 3-mana 3-3, it's not
cards are actually
not that
like,
bad.
Kinda nuts.
Yeah, it's not that bad, right? Like, that's actually a solid limited card, right? But people try to really get that web slinging in and you can get blown out so hard. So, it's a fun mechanic.
I got the other end of that where I thought they were just trying to get that web slinging in, right? But I actually got thwipped, and then they thwipped me again. And so they just removed my whole board of pigeons, and I was very upset. But, like, I think to touch on that, like, it is seriously kind of understated how good, like, spider manifestation is in this format. Being able to freely tap your thing without actually having to attack is very important in this because then you don't have to make bad attacks or silly attacks.
Yeah, there's a lot more synergies for that, I think, once you get into actual standard, right? Because you got vehicles and all that kind of stuff. So I think there'll be some interesting ways to try to build around web slinging there. I didn't do pre-release. I did play a couple of pick two drafts, though. I want to ask you, because pre-release is also limited, a little different because it's sealed. Was it all just Spiders versus Mayhem? That was kind of my experience doing like a couple of drafts. It felt like most decks end up some form of like Mayhem synergy or some sort of Spider synergy, which I guess kind of fits the flavor a little bit of like...
Right? What are the other two?
I don't know.
There's
I
only
there
four
archetypes, two archetypes.
Opposed to eight villains. Wait, no, there's five? Oh,
I guess there I thought there were five. I thought there's
it's half,
five.
Right? Normally you have 10 limited archetypes.
Yeah.
And it's
villains.
Half, so.
Villains are in there.
Oh, yeah. There's no villain support, really.
Not enough. Spiders. Yeah. Not enough to really build a villain deck. And maybe if you open like a bomb rare or something, you could go villains. So you got Spiders, Mayhem, Doc. Villains. Ooh, Doc Ock. Yeah. That's kind of a bomb. The other two, I'm actually not even sure what the archetypes are.
Well, I mean, I think they're, I don't know if it's like an actual archetype, but I just played against it and it was like green, red, stompy. And like on a stompy with Rhino and all, and like, you know, somebody did, I think somebody opened the pool you wanted, Richard. They had like two Ben Rileys. And I'm just like, dude, these are giant creatures with like Gwen Stacy, the common, the one when she becomes tapped, you may discard. And if you do, draw a card. They just bounce that back, and like there's a Ben Riley with a +3/+3 on it. Hit me with a Rhino, and Shocker was surprisingly good. Oh my God.
I will say, I actually kind of like the two pick draft thing. I think it's worse limited, right? Like, there's no way it's as good of a game mode as traditional limited, like as far as strategy and skill and so forth. But I really liked the drafts that I did. You could do the entire draft in like 45 minutes, like play all the rounds, do the entire draft. It just made it so much faster. Part of that's it's only like four rounds, I think, on Magic Arena, like four wins or two losses, it ends. But also the draft goes by a lot faster because you're picking two cards in the same amount of time as you pick one card normally.
Yeah, yes. Seth, no, that was a big problem.
I
fired up the first pick two draft. I read like three cards and the timer was up. They give you the same time for picking two cards as they would one. And it gets especially, like, disgusting when you get to the later picks. Because, like, now you have, like, 4 seconds to pick two cards. But yeah. Even, like, the first pick, you can't, like, physically read the cards in time to make a pick. And I'm like, maybe I'm just boomer, okay? I'm like, but I was watching, like, Keon draft, like, no one's getting through any of these cards. Like, you got to read all the cards and, like, figure out what they do. And, like, your timer's up. They actually need to double the pick time for pick two draft because you Seth likes it because you said you just got half the time to draft. But, like, okay. You don't have any time to read.
That is true. And I've heard that criticism from a lot of people, especially for the arena drafts. That is just not enough time. How much of that do you think it was just, like, brand new cards? Like, day one of this format. Do you think a month from now, when everyone kind of knows the cards, do you think it'll be enough time? Or do you think just, like, in general, it's just too fast?
I think it's just brand new cards, right?
But that's normal. Like, obviously, if I do Final Fantasy drafts, within, like, 0.1 second, I know what the pick of the pack is already, right? I don't need to read any cards. I know what all the cards are. But at the beginning of a set, you have to read the cards. Yeah. And that's what you need to optimize for, right? I don't know. Like, Edge of Eternities didn't really have this problem. Like, I mean, you kind of have this problem. You remember our real life drafts, right? We're like, yeah, taking too long, you know. But, like, it was, like, manageable. But there's no way. I'm pretty sure a lot of people will get mad, especially since you need to choose two cards. And, like, if you hover and click and, like, do weird things, right? Like, it doesn't work intuitively. A lot of people are gonna get, like, scuffed first drafts because, like, they're gonna get auto picked a card because there's not enough time. So I would be surprised if Wizards goes to launch without increasing the timer. Like, there's no way, right? And remember, all the early access people are, like, sweaty people, right? And if we can't pick it in time, there's no way casual people can pick it in time, right?
This was literally some of the best limited, like, Cheon and LSV. Some of the best, like, limited players in the world were struggling to, like, actually get through it in time. Maybe the solution is you bump up the clock for, like, the first month or something, and then you cut it down a little bit after that. I know that's something that, like, Battlegrounds does when they launch, like, a new mechanic. The round timer is longer at first, and then after a few weeks, they cut it back down to, like, the normal amount of time because they assume people know the cards now. So I wonder if they can do something like that with two-pick draft. Or
just everyone
it up
just
for,
choose
like
your cards.
But I like...
If everyone chooses their cards, it goes to the next pick, right? It's just, you know, like, some people, like, just like to, like, click and then, like, go get a coffee or something. Like, don't do that. You're holding up the draft, right? But if you're actually tanking on it, fine. Because if you reduce the timer, like, a month from now, what if you're a new player? You're like, oh, yeah, I heard about Through the Open Pass. I want to play it. Maybe hop on here. You're already getting scuffed by everyone who's grinding, but now you actually have no time to pick as well. Like, it's just so unfriendly to do that.
Yeah. So I guess that's true, but then it takes away the thing I like most about it, which is it went by quickly. If it's the same link as a normal draft, I don't know why I'd choose pick two over just normal draft.
How can
if
I open
it takes
17
the same amount of time
lands and read all the numbers, Seth? I don't have enough time. Like, come on.
I am curious, Seth, how did you feel, because I haven't gotten to do you pick two yet, even though I keep thinking of, like, get a sandwich and salad combo, but I mean the pick two
precise
waffle cup fries and potatoes
soup salad, no wait, sandwich salad. I was curious though, what did you think about it from a power level, like, point of view? Because I do feel like in a pick two you get a more focused deck, right? Because you're getting the two best cards in every pack, so everybody's deck looks almost like a constructed deck.
Yeah, I think you end up with a stronger, in general, I think you end up with stronger decks than you do with a normal draft, I would say, because you get two picks to start and it really pushes everyone, I think, in a direction. And then I think you end up with, I was able to pretty successfully, like, cut colors, I think more so than in traditional draft, because if you can pick, like, the two best cards of a color out of a first couple of packs, it really puts the people to the sides of you out of those colors. So I found the decks to be higher power level. But Richard, I see you shaking your head. Did you think it not?
So I actually enjoyed, I played one pick two draft, but I played two limited. I actually enjoyed it, unlike Edge of Eternity. So I'm actually going to try pick two in earnest. My initial thought, as all limited players would think, is that this dumbs down the draft, right? Like, it really forces you into a lane, and, like, everyone's just going to pick, like, the top two cards, and it really, like, cuts off the colors, and it, like, takes away the skill expression in drafting. And then there's only five archetypes as well, right? So four people in the pod, you all choose one and there's one free one, right? I think it's going to be worse, but we'll see how it plays out. I managed to luck my way into a real archetype. Like, I just chose two Selesnya cards, and then Selesnya cards kept coming. And I'm like, okay, cool, I guess. Right? But, you know, like, there's none of this, like, you know, choose an open color, keep the other one, and, like, you know, yeah, pack two, I switch. And, like, I don't know. Like, that's the fun of drafting for me. So, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I don't know. I hope there's more than two archetypes, right? Yeah. Like that's the thing we got to worry. If there's only two archetypes, it's over. Like, everyone's just going to force those two, and you're all going to end up with, like, nonsensical drafts. So I hope the five archetypes are actually viable, whatever they are.
I think this set's naturally going to be lower on replayability than most sets, right? Just because there's not as many archetypes. So it's going to be harder to draft it, like, again and again and again, because you're going to see those archetypes twice as much as you would with a normal set. So I think that's just, like, set size stuff. But we'll have to wait and see. I will say I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I thought I was going to be like, oh, this is, like, a trash format. Why are you even doing this? And I was, like, intrigued by it, at least. Enough that I will do some more two-pick drafting, maybe on stream tomorrow. So, anyway, what about Constructed, Grim? We got to do early access. Anything stood out as far as the set in Constructed? I will say, honestly, I don't know if there's going to be, like, a huge impact on Standard. I think the cards that stood out to me, Symbiote Spider-Man, I think, was super underrated. That card, I actually came away feeling like, oh, that card's actually, like, really busted. But even early access,
the Night Vale Spectre Symbiote Spider-Man, right? The two and a hybrid Dimir Pip one.
Oh, the one that copies something from your graveyard.
Oh, Superior Spider-Man.
Superior.
Okay.
See, there's too many Spider-Man in this set.
Oh, no. But, not even using the right words.
The one that copies something from the graveyard.
Yeah.
I found that card to be really good. Some of the flip cards, I think, have potential. I saw some people doing some cool things, like plotting, like, Miles Morales and casting the backside. There's some, like, cute synergies there. But overall, I felt like, nothing's going to be beating Cauldron out of this pile of cards, I don't think. But what's your impression, Krim? What do you think early access? What do you think will be good in Standard, if anything?
I ended up on Superior Spider-Man. Spider-Man, I think, is just a powerhouse. And because it adds this weird element now of, like, let's say this deck or whatever deck uses Superior Spider-Man, if that becomes meta, the opposing Superior Spider-Man can eat whatever you're trying to, like, throw away and then become that, right? So not only has it now taken you off of the bomb that you just put into the yard, it's now giving them a free one. So that'll lead to some interesting back and forth and, like, when to mill yourself. When you don't just, like, throw things into your graveyard all willy-nilly, right? So, like, that's going to be one of the cards that I think is very interesting moving forward. And on top of that, okay, I can safely say Venom's probably a commander card. I love Eddie Brock, but that is definitely a commander card. I am going to say, though, I think some of the archetypes and some of the cards like Norman Osborn, all of these cards are going to make other cards that exist now way more interesting, right? So, like, Monument to Endurance is something that's going to be really sweet with the whole, like, more looters and more of the mayhem cards. And the five, I forgot the name of the online version, but, like, Ultimate Green Goblin was really solid at it, what it was for, like, stat line and what it did. A 5-4 for 3 that allowed me to enable my whole engine and made me a treasure was very solid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if you got to play with it or not.
It's interesting, yeah. So the two archetypes that I saw the most, and I played both of them to some extent over Early Access Day, a lot of people trying spider decks. Like, straight up, like, curve out with spiders, playing spider ham as a lord, like, just casting as many spiders as possible. And then Mayhem was the other one I saw a ton with the Carnage and the Green Goblin cards, all the, like, discard stuff for value. I'm curious to see if either of those archetypes actually make it in full Standard. They were all over on Early Access Day. The spider deck, I was surprised at how aggro of draws it could get. I don't know if that was just early access aggro. Like, when I think about the power of, like, mono red in Standard, I don't think it's, like, as fast as, like, the best version of mono red. But it actually felt like a pretty legit aggro deck with, like, some cool synergies thrown in. Mayhem, I think, actually felt like it could be real. I'm a little skeptical just because of the way it works. You have to, like, discard the card. And if everyone's playing, you know, if a Soul Cauldron, they can be exiling your Mayhem stuff. But I feel like the Mayhem package was that's maybe the closest out of the set to being a Spider-Man deck that I could see actually working in Standard. Like, I think there might be some sort of Mayhem deck. You just have all these undercosted creatures. They felt really powerful. They play well together. They play well with stuff like Monument and some of the old Fear of Missing Out, some of these old cards that are really good. So I think maybe Mayhem, if anything from the set's going to be like a full-on Spider-Man deck, I think that would be the deck I would pick. I think we'll see like individual cards show up in other archetypes, but I think Mayhem might have a shot. But what do you think, Krim? Could that be an actual Standard deck?
I think Mayhem is the, of the archetypes that we've seen, is definitely the most likely to be played in Standard. Accounting for some of the cards, though, with like web slinging, I do think Ben Reilly, if you take away the cute stuff I was trying to do, like Return Ball Lightning, you know, which is, by the way, a miracle of a mana ask. But I do think Ben Reilly is good. Like, in the mono green shell, if you just splash red, you get to now just bounce some stuff back. And, like, the mana dork into Ben Reilly was a very real play and very strong. I like that play.
I think some of the standalone cards, I think, are good with web slinging. Like, the web slinging cards, if you can web sling them, they're very undercosted. It goes back to kind of what Richard was saying about Limited. Like, it's a very, kind of a very swingy mechanic, where when it works out, it feels almost unbeatable. But then if you can, like, keep the early mana dork, like, kill the Llanowar Elves, or keep that first creature from getting tapped, and then it slows it down enough that it's not as scary. But I don't know. What do you think, Richard? Any chance we see these archetypes compete at the big stage in Standard?
But I think web slinging is too cute. I think the tempo loss, right? Because, like, you're bouncing something, even if it's a mana dork that you replay, like, you had to have the combo, and it's like a big tempo loss. You probably should have just, like, played a real three drop, kept the mana dork on the field. You know, like, you could have done a lot of things, right? So I don't know. Like, I saw the Limited too. Like, people would just web sling for no reason. I'm like, thanks for removing your four costs off the board. You saved me a card, right? I'm like, oh, sure, right? Like, yeah, right? Like, it's a huge tempo swing. It's not all upside. My guess is Mayhem will see something because, like, Fear of Missing Out is a card, right? Yeah. Like, it's a very strong card. So, like, something to go with it. It's also going to depend on what happens with the BNR. You know, is Soul Cauldron going to sit around graveyard hating everyone? Or is that going away and we can actually play graveyards? So we'll see how that goes.
I do think it is very important, though, that, like, moving forward, I think Monument to Endurance just continues to get better. That card alone is just continuing to get better, and I think it's going to shape up and be a part of Standard in the future. If not now, it just, more things are discarding things, and Mayhem will probably be a part of whatever that is as well.
I hope so, because that's one of my favorite cards from, what's Aetherdrift, right? I'm pretty sure it was Aetherdrift, but it's, oh, that card's so good. The other card I want to shout out before we move on, this one kind of surprised me, because I figured this was going to be more of like a mean card than a good card, but I think Mr. Negative might actually be kind of good. Like, obviously, you're not going to be hard casting it, but as like a reanimation target, it actually felt really, really solid. There was a lot of games where, like, you're playing Reanimator, your opponent's playing aggro, they get you low on life, you Mr. Negative, and all of a sudden you just, like, win. I had multiple opponents. I was playing it with Herald of Eternal Dawn for the memes, the Platinum Angel, and there were multiple opponents that would see the Platinum Angel sitting out there, hit me down to negative life, and then I just Mr. Negative, and they just die on the spot. I was like, no, you have to see this coming. Like, you don't want to attack me here. What are you doing? It was
Seth,
so good.
We got a game in an early access event, and I was trying to Mr. Negative you before you living ended me. I was playing a version of Esper, and it was just all the bobs, and I shocked everything in. I was like, multiversal passage, shock, shock, shock.
It took me a minute to realize what you're doing. I'm like, wait a minute. He's trying to lose life. I see what he's doing over there.
Somebody was on to me and they just stopped hitting me. I'm like, no, wait.
What did you think of Mr. Negative, though, Grim? Do you think it could actually be like part of a real reanimator deck? Or are we just having fun on early access day?
I think the problem is, like, why not just end the game, right? Like, I feel like I missed your negative, and all that happens is, like, okay, you beat me down again. Because I did Mr. Negative to only then lose the next two turns later, because it's like, cool, you got a 5-5.
Yeah, I guess that is true. It doesn't immediately end the game by any stretch, unless you're at a negative life total, and then it kind of
well,
does.
Yes, yes, because the game plan was to Mr. Negative and swap, and then Morlun, right, to then burn you out.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so I need really a way to self mill, reanimate, and then the closer. So it's not even that the reanimation target is the closer, which is why I just kind of did nothing, but it was funny.
Anyway, let's keep moving on. One more thing on Spider-Man before we move on to some other topics. So one of the big topics of this weekend on social media was attendance for Spider-Man pre-release. Someone posted a Reddit post saying it was the lowest attendance that I've ever been to at a pre-release. You had a bunch of other people chiming in saying, yeah, attendance is down, you know, 50% compared to Edge of Eternities, or 75% compared to Final Fantasy, or there was only 4 people here at our pre-release. You had other people saying mine sold out, it did really well. I'm curious, you guys both went to pre-releases. What did you make of attendance at your pre-releases? It's always so hard to tell with the internet, like, because I think there's a tendency that the people who are like negative and are upset are more likely to post than the people who are just having fun playing at their pre-release with a ton of people. So maybe it's skewed a little bit in that direction. But what did you guys think? Like, what was attendance like at the events you guys went to?
In a major city, right? Like, all mine have so the first one I went to was like pretty much sold out, and the second one was sold out, and then the third one was just with a bunch of friends, which was a lot of people. There's like 30 of us all just playing, so which is like really good, right? Because that was the same for EOE for me.
Normal attendance is a normal pre-release, basically.
The player base slightly shifted, right? Like I played against someone who was like, oh, I've been reading Spider-Man since the 70s. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, obviously older player. He's just like, I don't know why they didn't do this sooner. Like, and all of that. I'm like, well, probably licensing. but yeah, there was people that were hadn't played since, somebody was sitting next to me, they hadn't played since Theros. So that was really cool to see a different player base each time, right? Like EOE brought a certain player base, and then Spider-Man brought a bunch of different people that I don't normally see at pre-releases. So new people are cycling in. You know what I mean? So that's been the pretty neat thing. And then it's also interesting because you're competing in this area with, like, unfortunately, the Downtown Disney pre-release. So there's the Downtown Disney pre-release that's, like, also, like, sucking everything up because everything over there is MSRP.
Oh, man. So that's like the hack to getting cheap Spider-Man is going to the Disney store.
I had a buddy who
went.
Did you
see the line for that?
Yeah.
I did see a picture of a very long line. That makes so much sense. Yeah. If you're getting MSRP, that's probably worth waiting for. What about for you, Richard? What was attendance like in Dallas?
I don't know. So it was the first time I've been to the LGS. When we arrived there, we were trying to check in. They're like, did you guys sign up? Because we're about to sell out. So I snooped my actual LGS. They still had tickets available. So it would be exactly like Edge of Eternities, right? So Edge of Eternities, like up to the moment it fired, there were tickets available, and then it like sold out like right before. Whereas Final Fantasy sold out for months, right? Like sold out like way, 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 way in advance. So I would say it's more like Edge of Eternities. I will say the LGS I played at, It's possible because everyone was there for Bandai Fest. Everyone's super casual. Like they like barely knew how to play Magic, right? They're like, yo, it's like my ride is coming, and if they come halfway, no shade to you, I'm leaving because I gotta go pre-register at Bandai Fest. I'm like, oh, I gotta do that too. Let's finish this fast, bro. Right? Like, and you know, they're like using weird words like I restand my thing or I activate, you know, they're using lingo from other card games, just like when Magic players play other games, they're always like I tap, I mill, yep, instead of using whatever the card game stuff was. But like everyone seemed excited to play, right? And I think it's doing what Wizards wanted, which is like they play card games, they like Spider-Man, and they roughly know Magic, right? Enough to like get through a pre-release, but you know, you can tell they don't play regularly. And then they had some fun casting some spiders, and then they went home. So yeah, I mean it was cool. It was like full.
So
it's not like Ghost Town, like some of these Reddit threads would have you believe,
right?
But I don't know, right? Like it's a regional thing, right? Because like if your pre-release is normally 16 people and 8 people don't show up, that's like empty.
That's
now,
a huge
right?
deal, right?
But if your pre-release is normally like 80 or something and only 64 show up, like I don't know that you would actually see a difference when it's that big, right?
And I will
I don't,
say
I don't
oh go ahead.
I don't I don't think we're going to also, let's not lie about it here. Let's be very, very forward about this. I don't think we will hit Final Fantasy again. In that same way that, like, Final Fantasy was absurd. I think that is, like, an anomaly, right? Because I don't think I've seen pre-releases packed to that level for a very long, like, I don't know when the last time I saw pre-releases.
That's true, but if you had to, like, list mind-blowing franchises that you can think of, right?
Yeah.
Most of us wouldn't have gone to Final Fantasy. So
no,
there's got to be something in the future that blows that out, right? Like,
but in the past, at least, I can't think of anything that's caused that much of fanfare at a pre-release.
Correct.
Right?
Oh, I think that's true. Yeah, it was the biggest one for sure. But I think I agree with Richard. Like, no one really saw Final Fantasy coming, I guess, to the extent that it did. So there could be something else that blows up in the future. I will say about pre-release, I have heard from basically everyone that actually played in one that they thought it was super fun and they enjoyed the set, they enjoyed the mechanics. So it seems like
the review was positive
for the people. Well, after they played with it, right? After they played with it, they were like, oh, it's actually super fun.
Well, I will say this. I will say this. It was super expensive.
I did not appreciate it, right?
So I don't know what it costs in your areas. It cost me $50 and
yep, that was
10 packs.
Me too.
So, you know, your packs and your prizing, I again opened $0. And not only $0, but like no card I wanted to keep. Like not even like a 50-cent like Scarlet Spider or anything, right? Like I could have taken my whole stack and throw it in the trash, and I would have been like, you know, no different, which is different from Final Fantasy, right? Final Fantasy, I'm like, oh yeah, look at the Shiva cards, great, right? And it's like worth 5 cents. So Final Fantasy, at least I walked away with $25. I had a lightning, but Edge of Eternities again $0. Spider-Man $0. Like, these play boosters are killing me. Like, if I paid $20 for this, I'd be like, yeah, $20 for some fun, great. But I'm like, $50. And I opened like zero, right? Like, this is disgusting.
I don't think pre-releases should. I miss the days when it's like pre-order $20, $25 at the door. That's what it should be always, right? Like, and that's what it should stay at. I don't get how we're at $50. And I heard that online, they were like, yeah, my store was like empty. It's like, yeah, but they also charge like $65. And I'm like, you're getting super overcharged. And then I saw online somewhere, somebody said that somebody's store was charging you for a kit and a booster pack, but you did not get the booster pack. So you just got the kit.
Wait, what?
Wow. I saw that online, and that was like I think it was like on TikTok or something like that. And I was just like, what's going on? But I don't know. There's regardless, I don't like this, like, you know, varying like charging costs. Like, I liked when it was just everyone paid either $20 or $25 at the door. I think it's very simple. I don't care.
Different, right? Because some LGSs give you a participation pack, some do not, right? And they charge that in. And also, I don't know, like, your cost of living surely like factors in. Like, I don't know, like, I'm guessing your LGS is on the high end, Krim. How much did you pay since you're in LA?
50.
Yeah, okay. So same as Dallas. But it's just like way too much. And if you didn't even like Spider-Man, would you really pay $50? You know what I mean? Like, I like Spider-Man and I still felt ripped off, right? I'm like, I were not on a podcast? No.
Yeah. And I like Spider-Man. I like Marvel and I love Spider-Man's world. I love all of that. I love magic, but I am still too price memoried into $25. That's it. I just don't.
It's fine if you like open like value, like if you open like $30 of cards, even if they're going to go to zero next week. But I didn't even get that. I started at zero and I'm going closer to zero next week, right? Like, there's like no value, no special treatments, like nothing. Like, everything you sold before the set are in collector boosters, which are like unattainable, right? So you actually got to go to the Disney store for MSRP. So, like, I don't know, man. It just didn't feel very Spider-Man to me.
You didn't have the cosplay buff, dude. I've opened a comic book variant thingy, like one of the bonus sheet cards of binding in my pool. And my promo was Gwenom. And it's because I was dressed up as Venom. So,
Oh my goodness.
What they need to do to solve Richard's problem, I think, is actually super easy. I think the difference between Final Fantasy and Spider-Man is just taking the special sheet out of the set, or not all the way out, but making it one a box instead of one per pack. I know when I was opening boxes, every single pack felt very Spider-Man-y just because of that sheet. No matter what the rest of the pack looked like, you're getting at least one guaranteed, like, iconic Spider-Man art in a cool pose. Even if your card is Shock or some valueless card, it still looks like a super cool piece of Spider-Man art. So I think that if they just did it like Final Fantasy, where every play booster you got one of them, I think that would mostly solve the issue you had with
just
it.
Just give me the art
That's
card
such
back.
A problem,
the art
though.
Card, too, right?
Like, those are even more rare as well. Like, because remember, I think at Edge,
they pulled back on them or something, right?
Did they? Okay. Because, like, I think I out of, like, two collector's boxes, I got only, like, six art
cards.
Yeah,
I didn't get that many either, yeah.
One of them was actually the gold signature stamp or whatever, right?
So Final Fantasy, in your play boosters, you get art cards. Art cards. I didn't get a single art card for Edge or Spider-Man.
They finally nailed the flavor, like, where it didn't just feel like random cards, like in Final Fantasy. Like, I don't know why Shadowbringers is a Brainstorm or whatever, or Dovin's Veto. But like, here they finally nailed it, and they just plummet the drop rate.
Yeah, I know that. That's something I hope they reverse in the future, just even to just make it feel more like the IP that you're doing. Like, let the, you know, the normies get some cool art, too. It doesn't all have to be in collector boosters. But let's move on. We got an announcement coming up this weekend. So this weekend is a Pro Tour. Pro Tour, Edge of Eternities on Spider-Man release weekend. I don't know how they ended up with that decision, but it's Pro Tour Edge of Eternities. It's a modern Pro Tour, which I'm really excited about. But we're also going to find out the magic sets for the next year. So we know we're getting six sets at least next year. There might be a seventh set that's like some sort of master set. Not confirmed yet. What we know so far is we're getting Lorwyn and Strixhaven to start off the year. There's going to be an unknown in-universe set that's supposed to wrap up the story arc with Jace and Lou and Vraska and all that stuff. And then there's three Universes Beyond sets that are currently unknown. But we got a little information this week that they're going to do a Nickelodeon crossover. They've been teasing an announcement. I think October 10th is the date at a Comic-Con of some kind, where they're going to announce a Nickelodeon crossover. What do you guys expect for the next year? What do you think those Universes Beyond sets might be, the ones we don't know about? And what Nickelodeon set do you think it's going to be? It seems like the speculations on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Is there anything else from Nickelodeon that could make a good magic set?
So if we're going to talk about what I want and versus what I think it is, I think these are going to be very different things. Because what I want is Invader Zim, Ah Real Monsters. Oh, and Fairly Odd Parents to release alongside Lorwyn so I could have Crocker yelling fairies
what
everywhere.
What are these things you're saying?
Dude, Nickelodeon is like peak 90s kid. If you're a 90s kid, you've probably been associated with these shows, right? Because, I mean, there's like
these
Rock
are 90s
Modern
shows?
Life. Yeah.
I don't recognize
like early 2000s at this point. I don't remember, but the main thing here is I want Invader Zim and I want Danny Phantom, but I think that none of these make good for a full magic set. What I actually want is for them to not do an individual Nickelodeon thing, but kind of like an all-stars of Nickelodeon. So you get a little bit of all these shows sprinkled into one set. Mm. And then, but instead, what I think, and like the only shows that I think from Nickelodeon that could like just on their own carry a set are Avatar and SpongeBob. So these are the only two shows that I think have enough stuff and enough random things so that you could have a set, a full set.
What do you think of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle speculation then? Are they an IP that can carry a full set? Or are you a little skeptical that turtles are actually enough for a full set?
So I'm very skeptical of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because it depends on one thing. Do we count extended universe stuff? Because if you do, then yes. There's been tons of things, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but like, you know, like Disney when they bought like Star Wars or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. They openly just started off and said that, hey, none of the extended universe Star Wars stuff counts. We may pull from it for inspiration, but it's not canonical anymore. So I'm curious if that's the same as Nickelodeon. And if that's if they don't count it, then I don't think Ninja Turtles can do it. But again, what I want is a all-star set sprinkle, so we have a little bit of everything. What I think we are getting, though, is, believe it or not, I think it is Ninja Turtles, because I was somewhere downtown, and I saw that next year they're opening up a pizzeria that is all Ninja Turtles. This tells me that there is some kind of big marketing
the big push
next
is coming.
Year. Yeah, coming. So it's like, it's probably Ninja Turtles. it'll be kind of whack if, in my opinion, I'm like, you know, I wish it was just all Nickelodeon, but it's probably just Ninja
Turtles. You're too young. You're not a Turtles fan.
I know, Richard. Yeah. There was even more that pointed that direction, right? With like the people announcing the set or something, or somehow tied to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. I like Googled what are Nickelodeon IPs, right? So Avatar. Yeah. SpongeBob. Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, yeah.
Mugrats. Dora the Explorer.
Oh, no.
Blue's
please,
Clues.
No.
Ninja Turtles.
Yo.
Now, of that list, what do you think it is, right? But then also, okay, so the panel where this was leaked, or not leaked, but like they're going to announce this, one of the guests, if you look them up, their Wikipedia, all it says is like Ninja Turtle, Ninja Turtle, Ninja Turtle, Ninja Turtle. like they're like the biggest Ninja Turtle fan like you've ever imagined existed. They have like all the old collector stuff. So everyone is like, duh, it's Ninja Turtles. And if you go by the Hasbro playbook, right, it's like what popular thing in the 90s made lots of money that we can sell to boomers in 2025? Ninja Turtles right there. Do you know what my actual favorite franchise as a kid was? Ahead of Marvel, ahead of X-Men, ahead of anything? It was Turtles.
Oh.
Right? Turtles and Power Rangers. Like, choose, yep. Right? So it's 100% Turtles. And after Spider-Man, I don't believe Turtles can hold a set, right? Because there's like 8 characters, and that's like not enough. Like you really need the Final Fantasy where, you know, every game has like 6, 7, 8 main characters times 14 games plus a common thematic element like chocobos and Shivas and Odins and Ifrits and stuff like that. Then you have a great set. Lord of the Rings, kind of like that, because it's across multiple books and the list of characters goes very long. But like Spider-Man failed at this because outside of like 3 Spider-Men, no one like really cares about any of these characters. Like outside of like 4 villains, like no one cares. And like that was one of the complaints of Spider-Man. I think Turtles going to have the same problem.
Bigger, by the way, Spider-Man
right?
should have
like 4 Turtles, Shredder, you know, Splinter, April O'Neil, maybe Casey Jones or something, Rhino, Bebop, and then you're done, right? Like, everything else is like, okay, here's a 1-1 foot soldier. Yeah, okay. Pizza, whatever, skateboard, this equipment. And then you're like, right? Like, it goes dry really fast for 300 cards, right? And I think the reason Final Fantasy was so successful because it was able to pull from, like, literally 16 different games, right? And there was like so many characters you can slot in that people were complaining, oh, my favorite character isn't even represented, right? They were all primary characters in their main game, right? So I think it is Turtles. And the real question is what art style they go with. Is it like, you know, the comic book style, which I'm going to highly doubt because that's like one of the least popular versions of Turtles, even though it's like the coolest. Is it like the classic 90s looking Turtles? Is it the new age? Whatever Nickelodeon, like the weird Turtles you see today. I don't know. I grew up in the 90s. So to me,
it's got
to
be 90s.
The classic 90s, right? But they have so many different options for the base art style of the set. And I'm sure you'll get like showcase versions of like the different, you know, art styles. But like, what is the base vibe and feel? Do they go dark and gritty like the original comics? Right? There's no way, right? Everyone has red bandanas. No way. No way they do that, right? But like the purists would love that, right? So we'll see how they go. But if they go Nickelodeon style, like the new kids cartoons version, it's going to be so bad. Like, I would be disappointed.
I don't think they won't, though. They can't, right? Because they're trying to sell it to boomers.
But
they
what if they're trying to promote, like, whatever Ninja Turtles reboot thing is coming out in 2026? I don't know, right? Like, what is the purpose
true.
Of this, right?
I guess I assume they were trying to get people like you, Richard, that grew up watching and loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid. But yeah, maybe, I don't. Are they still making Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Is that still currently
their
a thing?
Movie,
I
yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize
they look
it was
different,
still going
and they look
on.
Uncanny.
It's like almost claymation.
It's like when they change Slivers, the turtle version of it. See, everyone does that.
Oh, do they go with the realistic versions? Remember, like the live action movies with like
it's just a
vanilla ice
turtle,
you know, yeah. Like yo, like that look is iconic too. That look is iconic too, right? They could do that.
I kind of
though
it's
ahead,
not
Graham.
Better though if we're just sprinkling Nickelodeon then, right? Because I agree that I don't know. I don't see how Turtles can carry a whole set.
I yeah, like see why throwing Dora the Explorer in there will help it.
But
though.
No,
like,
I, is that yeah, really? I mean,
Hey Arnold? Maybe, like, do I want to see Hey Arnold in here? You know, like, is this
yo,
like,
hold on. First off, all right, I just need to know if Eugene is based on luck, right? Because I want to know what he's up to, okay? But I think if you sprinkle a ton of shows, I think it's way easier to do a set.
I think it would make it easier. I don't know if I think it would be better because you're going to.
There's nothing tying them together.
Steve from Blue's Clues. Like, I already felt like Spider-Man felt really scattered, and I don't want to, like, be like, hey, you should make your sets even more scattered, because that was one of my big criticisms of Spider-Man, is it just feels so scattered compared to a normal Magic set. But I guess it would solve the problem of not having enough characters. I think maybe Wizards made a mistake by saying every Universes Beyond set is going to be a standard set, because I feel like I know what they're trying to do, and it makes sense, but I feel like it cuts off some of the flexibility they have, like, in designing these sets. Like, if you want to do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you can't get a 300-card set out of it, maybe you make, like, Commander decks or do something like, but now they kind of took that option off the table, right? By making them all standard legal. They don't have the option to make just Commander decks or do a Doctor Who like they did before. So I wonder if that's going to make it harder for them after what we've seen with Spider-Man. Maybe it's going to be harder to make full sets of some of these IPs that would otherwise be a really good Universes Beyond crossover. So,
But the thing is, like, I think Spider-Man has more than enough lore, right? That's not the problem. I think Spider-Man is just too small of a set. Like, it needed to be bigger.
No one knows the lore, though, Krim. Like, everyone knows, like, four
characters of Spider-Man. Well, like, years of it.
Just think about this. Like, a Superman set, right? There's, like, 80 million years of Superman lore. How many characters can you name from Superman, the casual person? You're like, Superman.
Lois Lane,
Lex
Superman.
Luther, Lois Lane, yeah. I'm done. You know, and you're like, now what? Now what are the other 297 cards? Okay, there's a Kryptonite card somewhere. Now what, right? Like, when you put all
spectacular
the other
Superman. Amazing Superman. Like, not... But Superman UK.
Is this not the... So, like, this is why I think it's, like, okay, I think Spider-Man is an oddity in that, like, Spider-Man is the one character that is so popular that he could have his own set. But I do think that this is the beauty of, like, example, instead of focusing on Superman, you just do DC.
Yes, I think a Marvel set or a DC set would have been much greater, right? You could have your five Spider-Man, you can have your five X-Men, you can have your Fantastic Four, you can have your Avengers.
Yeah.
And then the set wouldn't feel like filler, right? Like, everything would be like an all-star, like kind of like Final Fantasy, right? So I think that's what they should have learned in all of this, but obviously all these sets have been made already. So you can't apply this learning for another two, three years, right?
But then this is where, then that's why I think Nickelodeon, if you instead of going just Ninja Turtles, you go Nickelodeon, you get all of it, right? So, and like maybe, and like it's not that too far-fetched of an idea because I know they made a game that was meant to be like Smash. It was terrible. But the main thing here is it wasn't because of like, you know, a bunch of different Nickelodeon IPs were fighting each other. It was more of just fighting mechanics than anything else, so the gameplay. But that's why I think it does look interesting, and it is kind of a cool idea if you're going to do Nickelodeon, you just pull from their history instead of one franchise.
Yeah, we'll find out soon. I had that same idea for, like, Nintendo. I think you could do that way. Yeah. Like, I think a Mario set or a Zelda set might be hard to do a full set, but if you did, like, NES, you could do all of that stuff and maybe end up with, like,
you
kind
do
of
Mario.
A full set. Yeah, maybe.
I think Mario, you could do a full set.
Spectacular Mario. Okay. Mario UK.
Oh. There's so, like, this is the problem. Like, every franchise, you know, has like four or five characters, right? And everything else is filler. And, like, I'm not sure you're happy with, like, a mushroom card and a, you know, flower card
Goomba?
And a raccoon suit card. Like, I don't know, right? Like, you kind of just want Mario and, like, that's it, right? Like, so yeah. We'll see how they approach it, but. Yeah, we'll find out this weekend.
We'll find out this weekend all the sets for next year. So if you got predictions, let us know in the comments. Also, are you guys going to watch the Pro Tour? What's your hype level for a Modern Pro Tour? Is that something that interests you guys anymore? I'm actually very excited. I think Modern's in a really good place right now. So I'm actually like kind of planning on watching a lot of Magic this weekend. But are you guys going to watch any of the Pro Tour?
I'll tune in to like just see who's at like a top eight or something, but yeah. I won't actively be following it because Modern is just
not your jam.
Not my jam.
Yeah, I've abandoned Modern. I'm not even pretend to watch it or make time to watch it.
It's coming back, Richard.
I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not what I want it to be. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I think a lot of people are saying, like, modern's the healthiest it's been in a really long time. And I'm like, that's great and all for you, but it's not where I go play old standard cards.
No.
You know what I mean? It's not where I go watch the classics. I guess, like, I don't know, Primeval Titan's still a card, right? But, like, it really is, like, Modern Horizons block constructed, and I really don't care about that. So I actually want to see, like, if there's Universes Beyond problems or Secret Lair problems of, like, alt arts and stuff. Like, I'm actually curious if someone gets got by playing. I played Final Fantasy Fury or something, right? Or, you know, like, stuff like that. But, like, that's it. Like, I don't actually care for the metagame itself. I care about how our reprints, like, of all these modern staples.
Richard's the guy that watches the NASCAR race just to see the crashes. Yeah, like, yeah, we're going to watch the Pro Tour just to see someone get DQ'd for playing a foil.
You're like, is that five solitudes in your deck? Oh, no. I thought this was a different card.
I won't say in what episode, but it is a Commander Clash episode, and I definitely played two Farseeks.
Oh, I've done that before too. I did that, yeah, a long time ago. It's an easy mistake to make. Anyway, couple last topics before we get to fish mail. Last week, we talked about how Wizards should maybe embrace Fleam and its surprise popularity. Well, since then, Wizards came out and said, we know that you love Fleam. We're going to make a bunch of cool arena stuff. There's going to be Fleam avatars in sleeves and stickers. And if you want them, all you got to do is play some Omen Pass, do a draft, buy some packs, and we're just going to give you these for free in October. So it seems like they're listening. They're listening, at least.
I don't understand why you're giving me Fleam on Arena. Look, I need more Fleam in paper. See, this is I need a paper Fleam. And so what I may do, because I have multiple Green Goblin cards, I want to have one of them be Norman Osborn, and I'll write my own lore. Norman Osborn flips into Fleam, not the Green Goblin. Now that is also, I will write a full comic for that on my own time. And but, like, I love Wither as well. I think these are really cool characters, and I'm kind of sad because I hope that this isn't the end of them. I want to see Duskmourne 2 or whatever, but I want to see these characters return, and especially Fleam. Again, Fleam can return on any set, though, so that Fleam is the truth. I love
Fleam. So if you want Fleam, it's actually kind of limited. So you got to play, you got to do one of the following before September 30th, so basically a week from now. Open 10 OM1 packs, play in draft, one draft or sealed event, or purchase the Mastery Pass. So you gotta fork up some money, and then you will get a Fleam avatar, sleeve, and sticker. So it is free, provided you use money to do one of these things. I guess you could save enough gold to do
a
draft.
Gold? Yeah, yeah, you could do that with gold.
But,
yeah.
So, yeah, it is free, but it requires you to do some investment.
And the packs must be from the store. So your reward packs do not count. So you have to buy 10 packs from the store, it says specifically. But so that's, yeah. I'm glad they're embracing it. Everyone loves Fleam. Speaking of stuff people love, Krim, I know you're kind of a basketball fan. I don't know if you saw that this week. Richard, we got some, speaking of Universes Beyond crossovers, we got a little NBA crossover action going on. What happened in the Magic NBA world this week?
Out of left field. At Orlando Magic tweeted, top five Magic players of all time. Kai Boudé, John Finkel, Paulo Vitor, David DeRosa, Luis Scart Vargas, Gabriel Nassif.
Dude, that's
why? Like a social media manager got overzealous here? Or is there an NBA crossover happening? Like what is
going
on?
I'm just saying, dude, after hearing that they would do K-pop, right, and all of that for a secret lair, I meme that, like, there is a very real chance if that ever gets greenlit, there's a LeBron James secret lair coming and you know it. And
I think there's a little more to this. So how I saw this go down is Orlando Magic posted, like, a couple days before this tweet, who's the top Magic player of all time, referring to the Orlando Magic. And they had a bunch of people that were saying Shaquille O'Neal and whatever, Penny Hardaway, all these old players. But then there were people answering with Magic names, and it became like a thing that people were like responding with Kai and Finkel instead of actual basketball players. And then a couple days later, I guess they just embraced it and ended up posting this. Do you think that NBA crossover could work, Krim? Do you like the NBA? Do you think that would actually be a reasonable universe is beyond?
No, because they're just going to make my team bad because the Kings have been bad forever.
I mean, your team is bad, Krim. They're not going to make it bad. They are bad.
0-1s that just like do nothing, right? Like vanilla 0-1s.
The Kings are like the kid who doesn't know the value of his card and trades like the Shivan Dragon for the Black Lotus. That's how the Kings run their franchise.
They also they buy into every pre-order hype. They overpay as much as they can. So
yes.
You guys are memeing, but remember the LA Dodgers did a One Piece TCG crossover event where they gave out straw hats and a promo Luffy card. That card is currently $500-$600.
So yeah.
Okay? And they gave it for free to everyone who attended the baseball game, LA Dodgers. Now, LA is a little special because Otani is there and they have like a huge, Japanese fan base and Japanese people love One Piece, right? But it is not out of the question that there is some special secret layer given to everyone who goes to a Magic game, and it's like Jace in a Magic jersey. You know, like that would actually be a clever promotion, crazy success of the LA Dodgers One Piece thing, like the McDonald's Pokemon thing. I was actually in the airport. You can actually crack a pack in the airport in Dallas. Did you know that? You can buy Pokemon packs, One Piece packs, Tops packs in a vending machine. Like
Magic?
TCGs, Magic, yes, there was one Magic Edge of Eternities pack there.
Okay.
Collectors, right? But like TCGs are kind of mainstream. So it would not shock me if this was like maybe it started as a meme, but like Wizards should get on this, right? Like everyone who shows up gets like a secret layer, like one secret layer card, and it's like Liliana in a Magic jersey, right? Like what better way to spread the Orlando Magic brand? Because, like, I know a lot of people don't know nothing about the Dodgers, and they went to get the promo, and they're like, oh, baseball is actually pretty fun, right?
Right. Like, oh. It's the same thing we were just talking about with Spider-Man pre-release, right? You're getting these people who kind of know what Magic is but don't really play it, and they come in because of Spider-Man. It's kind of the same concept. I think that's a really good idea. I think Wizards should do that, and I think it's becoming more realistic as Magic becomes more mainstream. Like, 5-10 years ago, I would kind of scoff at the idea just because Magic was kind of in its own niche, right? But now Magic is, like, getting so mainstream, it doesn't seem ridiculous that there could be a Magic giveaway at an NBA game or something. So I hope Wizards actually
also,
does
like
something
NBA
like that.
Jam secretly.
Dude, if I get to play 2K and build Jace in 2K. Oh, dude, I got to tell you guys, there's just a quick lore drop. I used to be that kid that was on the microphone just sweating it up and just like mass trash talking and playing 2K. That was my peak high school right there. It was that and WoW.
Anyway, it is fish mail time, and I guess it's the Omen Pass in Universes Beyond podcast, because our fish mail this week comes to us from Mojus, who says, the Spider-Man Omen Pass set seems pretty popular. How long, if ever, do you think it'll be before we get an Omen Pass Masters? What do you guys think? Do you think we will eventually see Fleam reprinted as a paper card in paper? Yes, in paper. Do you think we'll eventually see that?
No, because this is only, this makes sense to us because we all play Arena, right? To those that play Arena understand that.
It's kind of funny. I actually think it's very likely to happen because my take is they're going to have to reprint some of these cards eventually, and I don't think they can reprint them with their other IPs. So I think all that's left is Fleam, right? Or the equivalent of Fleam. So I wouldn't be surprised if 5 years from now we actually get a reprint set that is in-universe versions of expensive Universes Beyond cards that they wish they could reprint the originals of, but they can't because they don't have the license. So I actually think it's pretty realistic because I don't know how else they reprint these cards. If they
Fleam
don't
with
do that,
the
it's like
sword.
An actual reserve list, right?
Fleam with the big cloud spiky yellow hair. It's just take whatever character IP, swap them out with Fleam's face, and that's
just
it
Fleam,
right there.
Yeah.
So Fleam is just evergreen.
I mean, how else would they reprint the cards?
I don't think they care. I think if they want to reprint them, they would reprint the Green Goblin. Like, they're not reprinting Fleam. Now, I think they will make Fleam. So, like, where's Fleam from? Duskmourne? Like, on the next time we go back to Duskmourne, there will be a Fleam card. I don't know where he's from. But, like, a new card. Like, a new Fleam card, not the Green
not
Goblin flip card or whatever. And I don't think Wizards cares to reprint them. Like, A, do you see any of them being played ever? Right? Like, you know, right? Like, do we need to reprint Vivi? Do we really? It's going to get banned, and then that's it. Like, do we need to reprint Vivi? And if they do need to reprint Vivi, why not just go back to, it's so popular that they would just go back and be like, yo, you know, we need to reopen this and sell more, and you will make more money. Do you want to make more money? You know, like, and if it's not worth them doing that talk, it's probably not worth them, like, remaking Vivi, right? So, but maybe... Like, maybe there's, like, 5 cards or something that need to be reprinted, but I can't imagine an entire set of this because
Fleam
who would want
Masters.
Like.
I know. So just so it's clear, I would envision this set to be, like, a few of the expensive cards from Final Fantasy, some of the Lord of the Rings cards, some of, the, like, all of the different Universes Beyond IPs, like, being remixed into a Master set. That's what I think would be realistic. I don't think they would reprint the entire set. I don't think that's ever going to happen. We're not just going to get the Omen Pass set printed in paper. That would absolutely shock me. But I do think, like, a Master set could be possible. Anyway, I think that's all we got time for today. Richard, though, how do people send in fish mail for next week's cast?
All right. Hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTG Fish Mail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And that brings us to the end of episode 554 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk Pro Tour results and whatever else goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out. We'll